Hey, welcome to episode 116 of Tangible Takeaways. Thanks so much for taking the time to be here with us, Pastor Kurt.
It's great to be here. Yeah. Love it.
You're back in the country, so you're back on Tangible Takeaways.
That's how it works. I love it.
That's how it works. Can't do it, you know, with the time difference.
No, way too hard. Way too hard.
We talked one time while you were over there, and it's like you're going to bed and I'm eating lunch. Just weird.
It was odd. Yeah. It was great though. Great to catch up, but yeah, I can't sustain that.
No, not going to work. And we had a guest speaker with us this weekend, Aaron Levy, and he did such a good job. So appreciated. You and I have both done a fair share of guest speaking work, and you can really phone it in if you want to. There's so many different ways that you can approach that, but just really appreciated the work that he did to not just dig into the text, but really dig into our church and know where we're at and what's going on with us as a body. And he felt very in tune with that. So
yeah, he really worked hard to ask the right questions before he got here. And we had conversations about what we're going through, and he got online, watched our messages, got connected. So I think it really showed up in how his communication just felt like he blended right in with the rest of us as our team.
Yeah. No, I really appreciated that from him. And I thought he made a, you know, it was interesting. All of his points were keep, right? Mm-hmm. That was the kind of common theme. And he made an interesting point, just really offhanded. It wasn't like it was one of the points in his message, but he's like, it's so easy to start any one of these three things. It was to keep praying and to keep loving and to keep serving. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to start praying, start loving, start serving. It's really, really hard to keep praying, to keep loving, to keep serving. And I look at you, you've got a rich history of background in not just walking with Christ, but also with ministry. And I wonder, what are kind of some things that you have found that help you keep doing those things? Because it is exponentially harder to keep at our faith than it is to just, we all have the kind of mountain high experiences and then we, you know, fade or fizzle in our faith. So how do you keep doing the things of faith?
Well, even echoing what you just said, I mean, I think failure and quitting is such a normal part of our life. It's me too. It's hard. It's really hard to keep that going. So no expert by any means. I think for me, the moments and the times and the seasons where I think all three are running, for me at least, or when I see all three as connected. So if I am praying for my people, my situations, the change that needs to happen in my life, whatever it might be, I think that then in turn links me to loving those people, loving God's will, loving what's happening, which then in turn leads me to serving others. I think as I kind of get any one of those missing, it's like a Jenga block, you know, you take one out, the other two are going to fall. And I think when I don't do all three suffer. And when I get all three benefit. And so for me, if I'm not praying for someone, I just won't love them very well. And I probably am not going to serve them very well. That could be at the church or even my own family. I mean, at some point, this is family too. So if you're praying for your family, it should cause you to love your family more, which then would cause you to serve your family. But if you're not praying, I think you maybe lose that partnership with God that you have in that. So then let's say you're praying, but you're kind of failing to love them. So you just kind of pray prayers for them, but you don't actively have a step where you're loving them. I think the result will be your prayers will eventually, you know, just go out. They'll just stop. And then your serving will never really get off the ground. And so I think they're all linked in my world, at least. They've all been linked. And so I think for me, it's helpful when I look at moments where maybe I'm not feeling God's connectivity in my life, where I'm feeling like I'm really tracking with God well. Using his outline, one of those three has been missing, and therefore all of them have been kind of shortened out in their effectiveness.
Yeah, that is interesting, because it does seem that with spiritual momentum, it's kind of an all or nothing kind of a thing with spiritual momentum. Like anybody who's experienced momentum in their walk with Christ has seen, like, it's like everything starts clicking. It's not like, oh, well, I feel like I really figured out prayer this time. It's like, no, everything starts, the wheels start turning, and it's just this machine that starts running. And then when we lose that momentum, it feels like, man, it's so hard to read God's word. It's hard to pray. It's hard to, everything becomes hard all at the same time when that momentum stalls. And it is interesting how interconnected each of those things are.
Well, and you look at, like, since we're in Peter, I look at Peter's life, and on the one moment he says, you know, who do people say that I am? Jesus asks, and he says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus basically thumbs up, you know, flesh and blood didn't show this to you. And the next moment they're clamoring, who's the greatest in the kingdom?
Hmm.
You're like, the same dude.
Yeah.
You know, or you're not going to die. I'll make sure that doesn't happen. So you have those moments where I think they are hit and miss at times. And the joy of life is when they do click, when they do buildings. I think it's like that flywheel. It just creates more and more momentum when it starts gaining that synergy between all of them.
Hmm.
And there's probably more we can, there are more things we could drop into just those three. We talk about praying and you talk about loving and serving. You could throw other things in there as well. But when you get some momentum, it's kind of fun. And then when you're out of it, I look in the mirror when I'm in a funk, when I'm kind of out of it spiritually, you know, it's then you start to realize the little individual parts that are missing. Because, you know, in my life, I might be great in this area consistently, but if I'm failing in this, everything gets dropped down a level.
Yeah. Yeah. It begins affecting everything. Mm-hmm. And would you say, you know, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, and I appreciate your humility, but at the same time, I'm also wondering, would you say as you've kind of gone forward in your walk with Christ, you have seen a growth in the areas of consistency? Like there are more areas that are consistent now than were 15 or 20 years ago. And how does that consistency build? Because I'm looking at it from a, man, I'm so passionate about following Jesus, but I still experience so much of this funk to momentum to funk to momentum. And there's this potential of maybe a lie that's out there that there's a time coming when I'll just always be in this season of momentum. And maybe that's a lie that, you know, I'm chasing in my youth of like, it would be really nice to feel like there's always positive ground that's being taken or a high level of consistency in these different areas. But so much of my walk with Christ has felt like these short spurts that feel like a lot of momentum. And then I kind of like, oh, now we've hit back.
We plateaued again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hard because it's just the nature of being a sinful creature that's not finished yet.
Yeah.
You know, when Paul talks about, you know, confident that he who started good work will bring it to completion, it reminds us that we're not complete. And then Christ, you know, when Paul was writing in Galatians 4:19, he's saying, you know, I'm praying for you until Christ be formed in you. And Christ already had been formed in them to the degree of their salvation. Their life has been transformed, but there's that inner transformation where Christ owns every aspect of your life, and that formation is, it's a process. And I think, I mean, I hope I'm more consistent than I ever was, but I also probably am myopically blind to areas where I'm not as formed as I feel like Christ can be in my life. And so watching him form certain things, like for me, there have been areas of massive, like, oh wow, I've seen huge change in me in this area. And it's so joyful to watch. But then there's those areas where you're like, I'm still hitting on my head against that specific issue. And it's like, man, I've got to figure out a way to partner with God better, because this is an area where if I could get stronger in this area, you know, and for me, what's nice, just as I look in the mirror, God has placed people in my life to help me in those areas where maybe Christ's formation is going to be a little harder. So if it's a compassion or mercy issue where sometimes I have to catch up to what Jesus is doing, I think he puts compassionate and merciful people in my life to kind of pull me toward that, because I don't necessarily have a natural, or even after knowing Christ, a supernatural inclination that way yet. I'm still growing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because there's a big part within me that feels like life with Christ should always be up and to the right, right? It should always be, there should be this really kind of linear motion to it, where we're always taking new ground and everything's just kind of moving and clicking. But I've never talked to anybody that's been their experience, you know? And if somebody's listening right now, that's been their experience,
let us know,
please, please reach out. But it feels like this, you know, real interesting conundrum, because obviously the desire is there for us of, hey, we want to just keep going, Lord. But at the same time, we're not the ones who bring about our own spiritual growth, right? It's him who's supplying the strength. And so it almost, you know, every time I hit those seasons of plateau, I am reminded you know, it's this weird combination of like, man, have I started slacking in some areas? Maybe. Yeah, that could be true. But also, like, did God slow down the momentum of growth and change so mm-hmm. that A, some of the stuff he's done in me in the last season could become a little bit more firmed up and cemented. Mm-hmm. But also, so B, I'd be reminded that I'm not as great as I think I am. And those moments of a lot of spiritual formation and excitement can also become moments where our head becomes three sizes bigger, yeah. you know? And so there's this really interesting thing with that plateau. There's a King's Kaleidoscope line that's helped me to embrace your pacing. And mm-hmm. I think that's the challenge of this. When I think of these keeping ideas, that's the challenge, because I have an idea of what it looks like to keep praying and keep loving and keep serving. Mm-hmm. And I look like a superhero in that movie because I yeah. have an idea of how that looks, right? I'm just the best person at praying. I'm the best at loving mm-hmm. and I'm the best at serving. And I can keep doing that all mm-hmm. day long because it feels awesome.
Right.
But that's not what the Christian life looks like. And it embracing the pacing of God, that I'm not quite the prayer warrior I'd like to be. And I'm not quite as loving as I'd like to be. And I'm not quite as great at serving as I'd like to be. Yet the one who supplies the strength hasn't given me the strength to be those things that I yeah. feel like I should be or I want to be. He's given me this much strength so that I would be reminded that he can still use me and my feebleness and my weakness, so that I could be reminded that the gospel isn't about making me look cool.
Yeah.
It's about making Jesus look awesome. Like, it's this really interesting, yeah, he supplies the strength. And when we feel like that starts to click, it's like, oh, okay, well then everything's going to go up into the right from here. And it's like, actually there's all of these valleys and plateaus which are still his pacing, you know? So there's yeah. just, it's a really kind of interesting tension there.
Yeah. I love that, the pacing concept, because it's, From his perspective, he's just working his good plan.
Yeah.
From our perspective, he's either too slow or too fast.
Yeah.
And then our own selfishness or our own blindness, sometimes we misrepresent ourselves. I love Colossians 1:28-29, where it talks about there's this, the Holy Spirit's working in us according to his will. Like, there's a partnership, there's a power that works within us, and we partner with him. Mm. But the way that we partner will be different times, different ways. And he's so loving and gracious that he doesn't give us what we think we deserve or are ready for.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Moses I wasn't there. I'm old, but not that old. But I read about Moses, you know, and he's feeling like he's been with God on the mountaintop. I mean, what a sweet moment. And he's thinking, this is great. And he has the gall in some ways regard, God, show me your glory. Mm. And he's thinking, I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
And God, are you kidding me? Here's what I'll do. I'll just let my goodness pass by you. Just one part of my character. And you're just going to get the backside of my goodness. Like, you can't even handle that. And when it happened, you know, he comes down and he's messed up. Like, I mean, his face is aglow. He's like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
But I think God, and I love the fact that Moses desired that. That's our role, to have that desire, that push, and show me more. And then it's God's in his kindness to pace us appropriately to what we're able to handle.
Yeah.
I like that idea, Jeff.
Which I think is so cool if we can come to understand, yeah, that's kind of how the relationship works. Like, we're going to be the ones who ultimately God always wants more for our lives than we do. But at the same time, in the moment, we're going to feel like, oh, I want more. I want more. I want to take more ground. Let's go do this thing. I want more of your presence or more change in my life or whatever. And it's going to be God who's going to be saying, I love that, but your character is not there yet, or whatever it is. And there's these things that I'm forming in you because you're not ready for that yet.
And the other side of it that makes me fearful are those that say, well, I'm not doing much, but God's not working me the same way as you. Mm. And almost downplaying their role and their passion and their desire to grow.
Yeah.
Because God's, oh, he's got a different pace and I'm just not there yet. And it becomes a cop out. Mm. For lack of desire, lack of effort, a lack of cooperation with the Spirit. So yeah. There's great tension there where we do too much on our own, or we could actually do too little.
Yeah.
And acting like God isn't there when I think he's always trying to push us somewhere. Just maybe we don't know exactly where that is.
Yeah, there's a sweet spot there where I'm bumping kind of right up against his pacing and mm-hmm. saying, I trust you. I want more than where we're at right mm-hmm. now, but I trust you and I trust your timing. And I'm not going anywhere, right? I think the thing that I see happen for me a lot is my desire will bump up against God's pacing. And then I'm like, oh, well, if we're not going to take this hill, then I'm out, you know? And all of a sudden I begin to dwindle and fade away. It's like, I want to stay in that sweet spot of, okay, Lord, this is what you've kind of set as the limit or the pace for this season, but I'm right up against it. And I want to take what's next when I'm ready and when you deem it ready. And that's that kind of sweet spot that where we're still staying really engaged, really aggressive after, yeah, I want more of Jesus formed in me. I want more of the kingdom in my life. I want to glorify and honor you more. But also I recognize in faith that whatever you have for me right now is for my good and it's in my best interest.
Well, and I love that because I think we're really good about ambition toward our accomplishments, about positions, about overt things.
Yeah.
But when we are confronted with character flaw, we're not too keen on being ambitious about that because it hurts a little
more. I want a promotion. I don't want to work on my selfishness or whatever.
Yeah, and so I think sometimes when it appears that our pacing's off with God, it might be where our pacing's off with Him. We're wanting promotion or privilege or power, any of those words. And He's wanting character. He's wanting to change us. And He's trying to get our soul. And so I think sometimes it looks off just because we're looking at the wrong target.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good too. And another thing that I thought was really interesting about Aaron's message this weekend was he talked about prayer, I think, in a way that's so drastically different from how probably most people listening engage with prayer. I thought one of the things that I thought Aaron did so well is it's really easy to get up in the pulpit and to be... to kind of put on a spiritual facade or make everything seem so much easier and simpler than it actually is. Right. And he did a great job of being a spiritual realist. And I really appreciated that in his tone and talked a lot about the way that most of us pray, which is these are the circumstances in my life that I don't like, and I'd like you to fix them, which is almost never how we see prayer operate. You know, it's very rare that we see it, this circumstantial thing, but God, what are you doing? How's your name going to be lifted high? What are you doing in me through it? And how can I better partner with you in this season? Very different approach, you know, to that prayer life versus a prayer list kind of a thing that he gave. And so as he's talking about that, I'm wondering, man, how do we shift from praying such circumstantial prayers to those, I think if you're starting at that, you'd be like, man, I don't even know where to start with the words, like what kinds of things I would even be praying or lifting up to God if I wasn't going to pray, please make this situation better. How now it just feels like crickets. Like, I don't know what to say to God now, you know, where do I go if I'm not going to pray those kind of prayers?
Yeah, that's a hard one because I actually think maybe just because I lack focus in life, I like lists as a starting point. So for me, lists of people and problems and concerns and desires and wishes and ambitions and challenges and things, circumstances, all of those things to me are super helpful to have a list for because I just don't remember very well.
Yeah.
So it's really a way to keep them on the forefront of my mind. So I actually, and I don't think Aaron was saying anything different than that, but as a starting point, I think the list and our oikos list, obviously that's one of the major ones on our card of, hey, who are we praying for? They're listed because we want to remember them. We want to think about them. And so in our, especially in our Western point of mind, lists are things that we kind of go over and like to check off. And if you can't check off of your list, you keep praying for them. Like if I'm supposed to go to the store and supposed to get, you know, milk, if I don't get that off my list, I have to keep going back to the store. It's going to, it'll constantly be there.
Yeah.
And I think in our, the way our mind works, that's how prayer is. It's constant. I think it's a great reminder. But I think if that's where it stops as a kind of a, just a grocery list of things to pick up from the store from God, and He's going to put in our cart these little things that we keep asking for, but then we fail to do the other stuff of God, what are you trying to change me in? What are you trying to do in my life? Then I just feel it's imbalanced. So I feel like a list is actually helpful for me, but it's so inadequate if I don't have the life, using Aaron's term. So that's, I think, for me, a key issue of not throwing one out and saying that's bad for the other.
Yeah.
But it's saying, okay, if a list is there, where's the list in? Like, where's the side where I have the life with Him and spending time with Him where we hear from Him?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's interesting because there's such a, it's so easy in prayer. It almost exposes something that's malformed in our entire relationship with God, because prayer is really the lifeblood of our relationship with God. And the level to which our prayers are so transactional with God, really exposes the kind of whole breakdown for us in that area of formation, where it's like, you know what, actually, I'm really only in this for what I can get from God and how God can improve my life, mm-hmm. which is why teachings in 1 Peter about suffering for God are like, heck no for us, because I started doing this. I started showing up to church. I started mm-hmm. reading my Bible so my life would be better, right. not worse, right? Like that was the beginning of the beginning of this whole thing, was to improve my life, not to make it harder. Mm-hmm. And I think prayer is a spot that exposes just how transactional our relationship with God is. When you look at especially the just kind of really beautiful language in the Old Testament, specifically in the prophets, God is so relational. Mm-hmm. And so deeply desires to be in relationship with us. That's the pinnacle. That's the goal. That's what he's after. And I think we find ourselves disappointed and our expectations not met because we are often after something entirely different, which is, yeah. God, we're back to that state of religion, right? I do these things, you make my life easier. That's yeah. the equation. And that's not what Jesus died for. Was to set that up.
It's the motivation behind our prayers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you're right when you say that. Like, we're just wanting, you give me this, I get a better life. You know, I look at Acts 10, you got Cornelius, who is a God-fearer, and he's just praying, and, you know, God said, your prayers have been answered, you know, and he sends Peter to him to give him the gospel.
Yeah.
There was this openness, but he was seeking God, not seeking his own agenda.
Yeah.
But then you have Luke 18, you have the persistent widow and that story where she keeps praying about the same thing. And in the story of the parable, the judge says, you know, I'm okay, you keep on being here.
This is annoying.
I'm just going to give you this thing, because yeah. her persistence was actually a quality.
Yeah.
So again, for me, that's the issue on a list. I have things on my list, both personally, for my family, for the church, for my oikos. I mean, I have lists like that I pray for all the time, almost the same prayers all the time, seeking God's will in all of them, but just saying, God, this is from my perspective, what I think would be great. Would you please answer this?
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to stop those things, because that's the Luke 18 side. That's yeah. the persistent widow saying, God, these things matter to me. Yeah. And then there's these things on the other side of the list where, and not off the list, that is more my heart, where I feel like that's where I listen more, I think, and I'm hearing God and I'm mm-hmm. seeking him and I'm looking at my character. I'm looking at my calling, looking at all the things in my life that he might want to continue working on, that it's not persistent. It's, I'm just seeking because I really don't know what he wants and hearing from him. I think that's, Dallas Willard had a book talk about hearing God.
Yeah.
And I think hearing God is probably the hardest thing about prayer. Mm. I think we talk to God really well.
A few of us even try it, you know, like because it's so scary. The moment you get quiet and you're like, okay, I'm here to hear from God, is the moment true fear sets in of like, do I have faith strong enough if I don't hear anything?
Yeah.
Or if I hear something, but it actually didn't turn out to be God, do I have faith strong enough to withstand that? Right. There's this like really big crux of fear when you do that.
Yeah, that hearing is so hard because you have the source issue. Is it accurate? Or is it just me in my own head?
Yep.
Is it something that's tangible? Do I have an action step from when I hear from God? Because in the Bible, typically when people heard from God, there was, oh, okay, I knew what I need to do now.
Yeah.
Is it confirmed with truth in Scripture? You know, all those things are linked. And so when I think it is scary, and we've heard and seen throughout human history, people have said, I heard from God. And most of the time when they say that overtly, it's turned out in a pretty bad way.
Yeah.
Where there's been abuses of faith and taking advantage of situations or people or even of the gospel. So, yeah, it's just hard because I think so often we talk about prayer only in a us-generated way. Mm. And I think prayer is so much more than that, that it's the hard part to get there. And I know for me, it's hard too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I love the tension that you're keeping us in, because when you look at Luke 18, that story, that parable, so beautiful, because Jesus is saying, what do I want in prayer? I want you to annoy me. I want you to bug me, you know, and that's a great point to that. Keep praying. Like, keep praying so that it gets annoying to God? Like, oh man, Kurt's back again. You know, like that kind of persistence within us to just continue praying.
Well, I think in the story, I'm curious. I mean, I doubt God is annoyed by our prayers.
No.
But your points will take him, because there's a side where I think the persistence of our prayer makes God take almost smile at us.
Yeah.
Because persistent people trust Jesus.
Yeah.
I think if you're persistent in your prayer life, it's that you have such confidence that he loves you and he's for you and this is what he wants to do. And he wants to maybe grow you first.
Yeah.
But that's something that's going to drive you. And I think that's something that in eternity, God's like, he probably loves persistent prayers.
Yeah. Well, because it shows so much faith too, yeah. Right? Because the thing that you've got to ask the question of is if you stop praying, why did you stop?
Mm-hmm.
You stopped because you either said, okay, I'm going to take it in my own hands and I'm going to go do something myself, right? That's, I think, why most of us stop, whether it's actually doing the thing that we were praying about, or it's letting out release of that lack of control in addiction or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go handle this on my own, right? Yeah. Many of us do that when we stop praying. But others of us just turn to a more fatalistic in other situations, like, well, life sucks and God doesn't care for me and whatever. And those are probably the only two reasons why you stop praying.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to keep praying because it's such a faith-filled thing to say, no, I believe God for this. I believe that he can do this. I believe he loves me, wants to do this. And maybe I'm, and that's what's interesting to me, right? You've got the persistent widow, but then you've got in Jesus's, you know, Aaron talked about his example of prayer, right? Teach us to pray, Lord. And his prayer that he offers is so, has so many things that are needs-based, but aren't specific about how the needs are fulfilled. And I think there's something interesting there because we're really specific about how our needs are fulfilled in, God, I want you to take care of this, but I want you to do it in a way that I'm comfortable and I never am afraid through the whole thing. And we have these like very, very safe, keep me safe prayers, right? That are not just what I need dealt with, but then also how I need it dealt with so that I'll feel safe.
Yeah.
Jesus's prayer is, give us today our daily bread. Whether you drop it from the sky or it's given to us because we have to ask somebody and that's an awkward interaction because now I'm having to put myself in a position of need. It's such a specific prayer to the need, but so vague to how the need is met and very faith-filled in that way.
Absolutely.
And you look at the widow as well, grant me justice against my adversary, right? That's what she says, grant me justice against my adversary. Not how that justice is going to be accomplished. I think that's what's interesting to me about my prayers and what I see happen a lot today is we're not just offering the need to God and saying, and I trust you for it, but it's here's what I need and here's how I need you to fulfill that need.
Yeah. Because we're best. We know best.
Yeah, we know best. Or at least we want to feel like we're in control. And I think that again gets to that bad heart behind prayer, which is, am I using prayer as a way to kind of strong arm God to get what I want from him or to feel like I'm in some sense of control? Instead, prayer should be surrender. It's me coming to the end of myself. This isn't about me. I've not been in control. I'm recognizing that. So I'm coming to the one who is in control. And I mean, you put that situation into a different context and you're talking to a billionaire and you want to build a house or whatever. And you come and you just say, I'd like a home. You don't say like, this is what the floor plan I was thinking or whatever. Like, you know how this relationship works because there's somebody who's got all the resources. I've got none of them. And so it's just, well, if you could help me, I'd like a home. It's very similar with God. It's not this like, and this is how it's going to look. And this is how it's going to, you know, I think we get that backwards where we start instructing him on how he's also going to fulfill our prayer request, not just offering the request.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I love that.
Kind of an interesting opportunity for growth, I think, there for me and for so many of us. I appreciated his pushing on us there. And then this idea of continuing to love. Man, I loved his, he had a point in there. You don't keep loving if you don't forgive, right? Like forgiveness has to be part of that instruction to keep loving, because otherwise you're going to stop at some point because the bitterness is just too much. And it just got me thinking, man, that idea of keeping receipts, that's such a good imagery. You know, you and I had Deion Sanders in our mind.
I literally was going to mention that. It was, well, because that was funny because when he was speaking, again, this maybe tells me more about me than it should, but I remember my Oregon Ducks this last year in football, undefeated Colorado comes to town. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance, a lot of attitude going on. And thankfully, the good team won,
yeah,
relatively convincingly.
And very convincingly.
And then after the game, Deion, Coach Prime, says basically, "I'm keeping receipts. I'm keeping the receipts." And it's just a reminder, like he's just saying, "I'm going to pay you back."
Yeah.
And that's a cultural thing. People want to keep receipts. I'm going to keep receipts. And I loved his story about Marisol, you know,
yeah,
at the Popeyes, yeah, like, man, he's keeping receipts. And that's where Prime is. Coach Prime is going after these things. And it's human nature to do that.
Yeah.
But it's hard because when you look at the receipts, it turns you ugly.
Mm.
And, you know, one of the things this is just kind of the way my brain works. When it comes to bitterness, it's hard because it feels good.
Yeah.
Like after that game, I'm sure Coach Prime was telling his guys, never lose this feeling. You're going to hold that in just anger and fear and bitterness and, you know,
yeah,
hold on to that because that's going to motivate you. And I'm like, wow, you know, okay, maybe in sports, maybe in football, that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily. But anyway, you know, for me, one of the things I do when I can't put my handle on something, like how do you not be bitter? How do you get rid of that? How do you forgive? Is I'll make a list on a whiteboard or on a sheet of paper, and I'll just write out, what are the benefits of me being bitter?
Hmm.
And I'll just write them out. Because if it's something I don't quite get my head around, like what's the win out of this? What's the win out of this?
Yeah.
What's the win of this action?
Because you know internally, you're clearly reaping some benefit from it.
There's
by the
something
fact that you
there's
don't wanna...
something that I'm winning. And then when you start writing those out, you begin to look on this paper or on this board, wherever you're writing at, and you begin to see those are things I don't want true of me.
Mm.
And it helps me because it makes it from just that emotive, like I've been hurt and now I can't wait to hurt someone else back.
Yeah.
To now it's saying, hold up, what's the win for me to hold on to this anger, this bitterness, this, you know, this disillusionment, whatever it might be. And that list is pretty ugly.
Mm.
That list is not something like you're like, that's the kind of person I'd want to hang out with.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'll do. I'll say, what's the win? And then if I get that happening, so if all those wins happen, and usually it's a pretty short list, but let's say those happen, I wouldn't want to be that person, nor do I want to be with that kind of person.
Yeah.
So on my own list, I'm realizing the goals that I now have for my life, because I'm holding onto this receipt, is actually going to cause me to be the person I never want to be like, nor would I ever want to be with.
Mm. Yeah. I love what you're saying, because bitterness is so short-sighted, right? You have to play out at some point. You have to pull back from the emotional kind of flurry you get into in bitterness. And you have to say, what's the long game here? Because bitterness is so satisfying for the first 2 weeks, the first 2 months, depending on the severity of the issue. It's super satisfying for a duration of time at the front end. Everybody's happy to hear you talk about it. Like, yeah, you bring it on, you pour it out, spill all the tea, what's going on in this situation or whatever. That is so much less appreciated and so not cool 5 years from now, right? When that thing is still something that you're holding on to and everybody's heard somebody start spouting something that they're still bitter about. And it's like,
get over it,
bro. It's been how long and you're still caught up on that?
Well, and what's funny, Jackson, is I think the fact that the first group is listening for the first series of weeks or months and cheering you on, and now they're like, why don't you just get over it? At some point, they're not even helpful because you should get forward for it at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's harder later to get rid of it.
But when you get the tea, you get that information, they're sharing in that at some level that is cathartic to them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I got my own issues.
Yeah.
And then they could share who they're fired up about.
Yep.
And eventually you're like, oh, wow, we're just a bunch of angry people.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at that beyond the just instant gratification of this conversation, where we get to talk about all the things that we're frustrated about and who that's shaping me to be, man, it's such an interesting thing, because bitterness is a self-inflicted poison. It's something we choose to take, and it rots us from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people who have been vessels for bitterness for the longest that have become so rotted by that bitterness that now it feels impossible to get rid of, because it's almost part of their personality, part of how they relate to people. It's just become a way of life to them. And when you play that long game out, well, everybody's had that relative or that person in their life. You don't want to be that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so the easier time to get rid of that poison and not be a vessel for it is at the beginning, not all the way down here. And if I start holding on to it now, nobody can hold on to it and not be corroded by it.
Well, and what it does, I think, it becomes your identity.
Mm.
And that's the hard part, is I think because you grind and you think on that and you're just fixated on it, that hurt that led to bitterness that leads to your lack of forgiveness actually becomes your identity rather than Christ.
Hmm.
And so people know you by who you're against, not who you're for.
Yeah.
And that's the worst thing, to say, oh man, I know that person's not happy about that person.
Yeah.
And rather than saying, oh, I know that person is happy about that other person, maybe later, Lord, let's say, it's just hard, because then everyone can see it.
Hmm.
The people with the axe to grind, you're like, oh, that person, I know who they don't like. And you watch two people in a room and it's like a train wreck ready to happen. You're like, what? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Let's separate those two. You know, you see it from a distance. That's a terrible thing to have be our identity.
Yeah, totally. And so when you zoom out and you say, well, these are the pros to holding on to this, obviously not generally a very compelling list mm-hmm. to holding on. But if you know in that same situation, this is maybe not a Christ follower, or not somebody who's living in submission to Christ, there's no apology coming my way, which to me in my head, I can generally get there, right? If you're going to apologize to me, I'm going to start to look like a bigger fool pretty quickly for not receiving that apology.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get there generally. But when you just know, I'm never going to get an apology for this, at least as far as I can see in the situation, how do you move forward and not become that vessel of bitterness?
Yeah. It's hard. I think for me, maybe what I would probably say is recognize the life that they have.
Mm.
And there are either things in their life that are blinding them to their behavior,
mm.
where they're now blinded by 2 Corinthians 4:4 talks about the enemy blinds. God has said blinded the eyes of those who don't know Christ, so they don't see the gospel. There's probably some areas of some people, they're just blinded. They don't understand the hurt they've done to you. And it's not something necessarily at that point, then you have to feel so much anger about it. It's almost pity.
Hmm.
It's almost like grief for them. Like, man, you don't even see what the person you're becoming and what you've done to others. I think when you recognize someone's blind spots, it's actually a little easier for me, at least, to say, I can't hold that against them.
Mm.
You know, they're not aware of what they're doing. I feel like it's a huge jump, but you know, on the cross when Jesus says, you know, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they do.
Mm.
There's a side, I think he just saw they're clueless, and they're crucifying the God of the universe. And I think he looked at that like, wow, okay, they just have no understanding.
Hmm.
And I think people outside of the body of Christ at times do things or say things that just, they don't understand the depth of hurt because they're not in our world.
Yeah.
They're in the world that's controlled by our enemy. And so they've learned how to adapt to that world.
Yeah.
Now I think the harder group of people to work with are believers who don't give you any sort of reconciliation. Totally. Or seek out forgiveness for hurts that they've done. I think that's the group.
Like, don't we follow the same Jesus?
Yeah. How come you're not seeing this?
Yeah.
So that's the group to me that's the hardest one.
Yeah.
What about you? What would you say to that group, Jackson? Like when you look at that group that's, you know, they're in the body of Christ, but they have overtly hurt you and they don't seem to have a care in the world. How would you maybe respond to that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've gotten, I've had actually maybe two or three, this was like maybe 3 or 4 months ago, but I had two or three people come to me with something that they were hurt by somebody else. All were Christ followers and created just the same conversation three times. It was just really kind of an interesting thing. And every time, you know, we'd look at Matthew 18 and we'd look at how Jesus really lays out a template for this is how you're going to deal with this. Because each time was fortunately not just gossip, but was asking me to get involved, which I appreciated. And what's interesting is there's that initial pull that everybody will have if you're on that other side of the equation to be like, yeah, let me get involved. You know, like, let me come fix this. That's not right. I'm sure that's hurtful or whatever. But man, if you take that bait and you get involved, you just escalated the situation by 3,000.
Yeah.
And that other person is going to be defensive. They're going to feel attacked. They're going to feel betrayed. Because we went outside of what's been laid out already by Jesus, who is not laying that out even because it's such a complicated thing to understand. It makes a ton of practical sense. If you've been hurt by somebody, you go to them first and you tell them that you've been hurt. If they're repentant, great. That's where we let that die there. They're a brother and sister. We're going to go forward. Mm-hmm. And if they're not repentant and they maybe even double down on like, no, I think you're in the wrong, then you bring that now back to a group of witnesses. You go in a small group, maybe two or three people. Yeah. And if that doesn't go well, okay, now we're getting involved at the church on the corporate level. Yeah. And if that doesn't go well, you don't have fellowship with us. Well,
and like, that's where the level of offense is really the issue at that point.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a wounded society. People are wounded by so many things.
Yeah.
And even within the church, you know, I have people that say, you know, this really hurt me, I've been wounded. And then you begin to measure that and you're like, okay, yeah, I can see that. And then there are times where we just see our own world so one-sidedly,
yeah,
that we're perhaps blinded by a situation where the hurt might have been real, but it isn't legitimate, if that makes sense. Like,
well, because most of the hurt I find is like 80% assumption, generally. Sometimes it's just completely malicious, but I find that's so the abnormality. Generally, when I'm super hurt by somebody, we start talking about it, all of a sudden it becomes really clear. Most of that was the assumptions I made about you, which actually says a lot about what I think about you and how unloving I am to you already.
Yeah.
And I should probably be repenting and confessing of that. Because as we're talking, I'm realizing you're not the supervillain I made you to be.
Yeah.
And somehow I was really comfortable making you a supervillain in my head. Yeah. So now I've got to kind of go reevaluate, am I operating in a loving way with you? But it's that jump to conclusions that where I think our culture's cancel culture misses so severely in this area is it allows you to just jump to insane conclusions and cut off relationship before there's ever an opportunity for somebody to say, wow, I'm sorry that came across that way. Never once was that an intention of mine. I didn't understand that. And I'm sorry that that happened, but that was so not even on my radar of something I was thinking about. And it's like, oh, well, they're just a person who had a bad day and made a bad comment. I've done that, right? Like, well, once you start talking, all of a sudden it gets real hard to not forgive.
Well, and we go, it's easy to go past actions to motive.
Yeah.
Because the action might have been hurtful.
Yeah.
But when you say, this really hurt me, and the reason why you did it was
blank,
all of a sudden now you are again putting on them a motivation that may not have been there.
Yeah.
It could be. It's possible, but it also could be something different. That's why, and we've shared this before, but one of the kind of the taglines in our home is, if there's two ways to take something, take it the best way until proven wrong.
Mm.
Doesn't mean it might be proven wrong. Sometimes you're like, really, oh, they meant it for evil. They got it. They nailed it.
Yep.
But a lot of times if you just hear something or you see something or you experience something, it's like, man, I feel like I should be hurt by that. Pull back and say, is there a way to take it the best way? How would I take it the very best way from that person? And then let's see if that's proven true to be of them of the best, rather than immediately going to, yeah, they don't like me, or they have an axe to grind, or man, they really are out for me. There's a side where I think that slowing down to consider motive, I just think we so often go to that's why.
Yeah.
And claiming maybe more than we would ever know about the motive behind any action.
And really important to do that before the conversation, because there's one group of people that's probably a bigger group of people that's just like, I'm not going to have the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. That's most of us. I'd rather go talk to six other people about it than actually talk to the person that I feel hurt by. But then there's another group of people that's like, oh, I feel hurt. I'm going to say something immediately. And in doing that, I'm often going to play the fool because I'm going to jump to motive. Mm-hmm. And so pulling back to say, I think, man, such a secret weapon in disagreements with a spouse, with fellow people in the body and friends and coworkers is just, you know, this was confusing to me. I feel like I might be potentially hurt by that, but I feel like I might not be understanding the whole situation either. What we've got to realize, like, this is such a good, I literally couldn't even tell you the resource, but Sky was listening to this marriage podcast and they were talking about the responsibility of both parties when talking in disagreement, and how the person who is bringing the hurt or the frustration, it is their responsibility to set the tone for the conversation. And you can come in a way that sets up a defensive response or a response that's willing to be received, right? And mm-hmm. so the way that you come in, the tone that you come in with that frustration and disagreement, they use the imagery of kind of walls and grenades or bridges. Your tone as the person bringing that, hey, I'm confused by, or why the heck did you, right? Like those bring out a very different response. Yeah. Why the heck did you is going to put up some walls, and all of a sudden we're tossing grenades back and forth yeah. at each other. This isn't going to be a helpful conversation. But hey, I'm confused about says, man, I really value you over the problem. And I know your character. I know who you are. So I know there, I must be missing something. So could you help me understand? Then you get a little bit of explanation, probably not too in depth because they don't yeah. know why you're hurt yet.
Right.
And you say, okay, well, that makes more sense. See, to me, I saw it this way and it was hurtful to me. All yeah. of a sudden, now we're having a really nice conversation yeah. and we're building bridges.
Well, and that's that whole passage. I think it's Ephesians 4:32, you know, be kind and compassionate, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as Christ Jesus also forgave you. And I love those. Kind, tenderhearted, forgiving. Mm. It's that attitude. It's the yeah. it's a building a bridge mindset. The forgiveness requires that.
Yeah.
That we're tenderhearted, that we're kind, and that we're going to be forgiving. I love that action, that the image, because Sky's right. I think whatever she was listening to, it's a great image.
Yeah.
Because so often if we come in to say forgiving and, you know, be bombastic, be negative, be yep. accusatory, you know, that's not always going to lead to forgiveness because that's not what Jesus did to us.
Yeah.
I totally. Love that part when he says, when he forgave us, that's the kind of attitude. Well, there's no one more kind, more compassionate and forgiving than Jesus. And if we can model that approach,
yeah,
I think, you know, that's the beauty of the gospel, which is also the beauty of forgiveness in any of our lives.
Yeah. And I love that. That's what Aaron talked about this weekend too, as he was saying that when we get backwards is when we make it the person who hurt us responsibility to fix us, right? Mm-hmm. And that's I think the main issue is we come in with this, hey, you did this to me, you better make this right, versus there could be a lot of misunderstanding here and I'm putting in work towards you, you're putting in work towards me, and all of a sudden we're building this bridge in communication that, you know what, we're working on our relationship over just the yeah. issue itself. And it's yeah. so, again, short-sighted to make it about the issue, because we're talking about a relationship that not only goes beyond, if we're talking about with a fellow believer, not only goes beyond this one particular issue, but into eternity. Mm-hmm. So there will likely be some apologies that'll have to be given in heaven, but yeah. From things that happened here, but hopefully we don't have too long of receipts that still need to get dealt with there. We've been doing it here. We've been building those yeah. bridges because we recognize these are relationships that go for a long time forward.
Well, and that's the relationship, Jackson. I love that, because what might hurt you might not hurt me very often.
Yeah.
And so when something doesn't hurt me, wow, I've got to be a real good student of you to say, oh, when you say you hurt me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I say, okay, Jackson, walk me through that, because I don't see how I did that. That's just being a kind human, it's yeah. being relational. And I do think that also goes all the way back to God, because I don't think we understand how our sin hurts him. Mm. And so even understanding God is hurt by our behavior when we are violating that. Sometimes we just blow it off like, oh, we're just, this is human, you know, yeah. that's just who we are. Well, I have to understand God. When I understand how much I hurt him, it does cause me want to be repentant more because I'm recognizing, oh, that's inconsistent with how I should relate to the God of the universe and the love relationship that we share.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that brings it really full circle. Mm. If we understand that in our relationship with him, we'll understand it as well in our relationship with each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you for taking the time, Kurt.
Love it. Great being here as always.
Yeah. Hope it's been a helpful episode here of Tangible Takeaways for you. As always, man, if you've got something that you're taking away from this weekend's message or something you'd like us to talk about in a future episode, please leave it there in a comment. We'd love to hear that. Don't forget to like the video, share it with a friend, and subscribe so that you get future videos as well. But that's all we have for this week. We'll catch you guys next week on Tangible Takeaways.